What is Tiger thinking right now as he's listening to this podcast? And Tiger, you've got my cell. Call if you wish, but
he's a little miffed. He's a little befuddled because one thing Tiger's not used to is being on the outside looking in.
It's got to be kind of weird for him not to be the most powerful person in golf anymore.
I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about.
Hello, this is Alan Shipnuck, back for another Fire Drill podcast with Michael Bamberger.
A year ago on this occasion, we were at Brookline.
Yes.
We were a three-headed monster then.
Well, we have a live studio audience. We're in front of some sort of drunken beer hall. They're getting rowdy up here. And we've got the Hollywood Hills behind us. We've got glorious Southern California sunshine. Like,
they don't even get rowdy at Dodger games. How can they get rowdy on the Tuesday of a U.S. Open at L.A. Country Club?
Okay, I exaggerated. So I'm prone to hyperbole, Michael. But we're here.
We are here.
How great is this?
Whoever came up with the concept of the West Coast Open knew what he or she or they were talking about. It's the best.
It was your friend Sandy Tatum, I believe.
No, because Hogan played in 1-48, lest we forget, at Riviera. We all know that. Alan, you lived in these parts for a long time.
Yes.
You went to college over the hill here at UCLA, right over here. You know the Riviera course well. You know this course to some degree. Do you? Have you been here before?
I have, yeah. I've played
If you were the czar of the USGA, you could only pick one golf course to hold a national open, Riviera or LA North, which would it be and why?
Excellent question. I mean, I would say LA North because I'm not a huge fan of having the majors at courses that already host a tour event. It's not as special. I mean, we know Riv intimately. It has its own history through the LA Open. You know, the PGA, the Elkington one was kind of weird and nobody turned out for it and the greens were wonky. Like, Riviera is special for what it is, but this is a grander stage. I mean, I love Riviera as a golf course, but it's a very tight little bandbox. And you come out here, just the scale of the U.S. Open is incredible. I mean, we were talking about this off mic, but like Oak Hill was tremendous and it felt like a big ballpark. When you're around the clubhouse and you got out to the other holes and it just felt like, you know, it could have been a tour event on some level. You get here and it's just the build out and the energy and the crowd. And this is a cool setting. I mean, you got the buildings of, you can see Century City, you've got Beverly Hills, you've got Hollywood. Like, I driving up here, I felt it. Like, I was on Santa Monica Boulevard, partly as you said, you know, I went to school at UCLA and this is a, I don't spend a lot of time in LA anymore, but when I get here, it's like, oh, this is cool. But like, wow, I'm going to make a left turn and I'm going to be at the U.S. Open, even though I'm right in the heart of Los Angeles. So this is just a really cool spectacle.
Hey, as well, this is the third major being played in the city limits so far this year. Augusta's in Augusta and Oak Hill's in Rochester. And here, I think it's, you know what, as I say that, I think it's not correct. I think it's in Pittsford. But here we are in Los Angeles itself, which is absolutely astounding. I mean, for those who don't know, there are 36 holes here. It's, as Alan was indicating, it's a big piece of property. It would be worth billions and billions of dollars if it could somehow be developed. I learned this only recently, that geologists come to this golf course to study what Los Angeles was like 1,000 years ago before it got all paved over.
Well, I mean, the La Brea tar pits are just down the road. I mean, so yeah, that doesn't shock me. But yeah, every other inch of Los Angeles has been built out.
And, right.
Not only is it 36 holes, but like just that double green at 9 and 18 plus the first tee, like it reminds me of like Kingston Heath or some other places where you get on that first tee box and it just feels big.
Yeah.
And there's just this expanse and it's just all golf and it's super cool.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, this has been said by others, but I have to say, I thought this when I first came here for the first time a few years ago. Whatever your notion of a U.S. Open course was, this doesn't fill it. There's no U.S. Open course. You know, Chambers Bay would probably be the closest thing to this. It's spectacular. It's beautiful. It's really, really a special golf course. We were just talking with Gil Hance, who redid this George Thomas course. And, you know, I wasn't joking. I said it's like Pine Valley meets Augusta National. But it's not a tree-lined golf course. I don't think it puts really that much of a premium on driving it straight. The players are saying that's not the case.
I trust you.
Thank you, Alan. But but regardless, it's a spectacular setting.
Yeah.
For a U.S. Open, and a thrill to be here.
I mean, are any courses tree-lined anymore?
No.
So
Oakmont's the Oakland. You know, Oak Hill was a little bit, but not really tree-lined.
Yeah.
No.
I mean,
no.
I agree. There was a template back in, you know, when my first U.S. Open was Oakmont. And they've lost 10,000 trees there.
Like, right.
That was claustrophobic and tight.
Right.
And there was a lot of courses like that.
Even Wingfoot in the Phil year.
Yeah.
It was still pretty claustrophobic. Totally.
So the whole palette of golf has changed a little bit. And this is a part of that. But par will be a good score here. Like, it's definitely going to be tough. And everyone's seen the videos of the ball just being into the rough. But when you're walking around out there, I mean, there's parts where it's patchy. Like, if you look, the grass we're standing on, you're going to be able to play out of it. I mean, it's very... hit or miss. I'm not a grass guy, but it feels like it's more of a lottery in this rough. You might get a good lie, you might not. And that, to me, I kind of like that. It's in the lap of the gods. So I think
what are you saying? Are you saying 280 is going to win or play off?
I mean, it's got a chance.
Well, I beg to differ. I think it'll be much lower. I think it'll be 270 will play off.
No, okay. Hard disagree. As Gil told us, he just come from a meeting, and they're like, "We love where the course is on Tuesday, but we're gonna start dialing it up a little bit." Like the forecast is perfect. It's between That's 72 true. And 75 every day. It's quintessential LA.
Yeah,
and the sun is out. They've had all this May haze and June gloom, but now the sun's out, so this place is gonna get crispy.
Yeah,
I mean, per your Augusta National comparison, like, there's some wicked greens out there, and they have some really fun little shelves and. If someone wins this at 270, I will be shocked.
And we should know it's breezy. And, you know, when it gets sunny here, it gets breezy.
Yeah.
When they have that marine layer, it can be very still, and then you could kill it. But I would amend that. Yes, very much weather dependent. And isn't this a joy? We've been talking about golf now for about 6 minutes.
More than six. Well, I'm not one to use a lot of hair product. I went extra light today, so the viewers could see the wind, you know. It's, mm-hmm. it's really, it'll tell you. Now, yours doesn't quite work that way.
No.
you're more like green
wind agnostic, if that's a phrase.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. I know, we have been talking about golf. It is pleasant.
It gets getting lost, actually.
I know.
And I mean, people have been saying this, and it is true. People who like tennis, you like tennis, and I like tennis. A lot of people like tennis. Nobody knows anything about professional tennis anymore, except for the four majors.
Yeah.
And golf could be heading that way, which I guess is good for the majors, but I don't know if that's good for golf.
No, I mean, did you hear Brooks in his press conference today at the end? See you guys in Hartford next week. I mean,
what? Now interpret that for me. I really didn't know how to interpret that.
Well, the first thing to know is Brooks is an absolute troll at heart. So he could have just been taking the piss, as they say, across the ocean that way. But I don't know. I mean, if the whole point of this is detente and they're going to try to reunify the game, if you're the tournament director at Hartford, do you want Brooks Koepka, the most dominant player in golf? Hell yeah. So maybe they gave him a sponsor's exemption. Like, I don't
There's
know.
No way. Maybe he's showing up as a spectator. He can't even come to a players meeting. There's no way.
There was no way a week ago, but I don't know. Things are moving very quickly.
I mean, maybe someone paying him $2 million to show up at a cocktail party.
It could be.
That, I mean, he's definitely not in the field. That's crazy talk. He's on the suspended list. Well, was Monahan only kidding about that too?
Well, the whole idea that they're gonna hit these LIV guys super hard with penalties and fines, and that's not really any way to unify the sport. Like, retribution and vengeance is not a good start if you're trying to bring the game back together. So I think that was bluster. I think that was posturing. I think the reality is that if you're trying to build a partnership between these warring tribes, like, that's just not the way to do it. I mean, I think Monahan was trying to quiet his angry membership. He was trying to put a little spin on it, but when the rubber meets the road, the tour needs these guys. I mean, they just do. I mean, Brooks is the most dominant player in golf all of a sudden. And do they want to scare him away? What, assuming that the live indoors, which, from all the talk, you know, Dustin Johnson saying that he heard that right from Yasser. Like, those guys are happy over there. They're making a lot of money. They're having fun with this team element. If they want to lure them back to the tour, they're actually going to have to try. Otherwise, they'll just keep staying. They'll stay over there. Hmm. I mean, Brooks is happy. with the majors, which he's in now for, you know, that's not an issue as a champ, as a, the winner of the PGA Championship. He doesn't even need world ranking points. So Hartford needs Brooks more than Brooks needs Hartford. That's the bottom line.
Well, that definitely is the case. Yeah, I know you've been potting about this broad subject for a while, and of course you're writing a book about it. But I haven't heard you on this specific question. In the balance of power, when you've got Yasser as chairman and Jaymon as CEO and a board that in theory is controlled by tried and true people whom we know.
Yeah.
Players and American business people and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where do you think the balance of power really will lie in this for-profit side of things? With Monahan and the board, or is Yasser going to get what Yasser wants?
The latter. I mean, all this talk about the board. The PGA Tour had a board. It had a player advisory council. It had a whole system of governance. And Yasser reshaped golf over cigars. Like, right. I don't think you can put too much credence in the board. The board didn't even know this was coming.
Right.
Like, I think that's the answer. Like, okay, there'll be another board, but the money is the power. Yasser has the money. But I do think what's been lost in all this, it's not a merger between the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. It's basically the PIF is becoming a sponsor of the tour. That's yes. It. That's all.
Yeah.
And I think LIV's going to remain a going concern that's more or less separate from that. Yasser will decide its fate. If he wants to keep funding it and he sees a path to profitability, then he'll keep it going. If he thinks it's going to be this albatross, then he can shut it down. But I don't think Jay Monahan will have any say in that, no matter what he's claiming publicly.
Yeah, he's not shutting it down because this is a little toy for him. Why would you shut down a little toy?
And now,
he loves golf. Now he's hanging out with Dustin Johnson.
Exactly.
What could be better?
And maybe they have a way to make money now. If they can use the tour distribution, all those platforms, if they have access now to all the tour sponsors, they've already invested, what, $2 billion? So why just lose that money without at least trying to get it back? You know, you could at most lose another half Billy, but maybe he there's a path forward. So I would be absolutely shocked. And then not to mention, we have all the antitrust concerns. Like if you have the Department of Justice, you have various senators and other folks like up your ass, you can't just shut down a competitor. Like how's that going to work?
Right. But doesn't Tuesday's news just make the Department of Justice more suspicious of golf, not less suspicious?
Exactly. I mean, you know, Senator Blumenthal is already calling for investigations. So,
right.
And, you know, Monahan, he was a little overwhelmed by the moment. For him to go on TV and say, yeah, we took a competitor off the board, that was the worst possible thing he could have said. Like, I guarantee that was not workshopped with Ed Hurley and other lawyers in his orbit.
Yeah.
Like, that was a mistake.
It felt rushed.
And Jay did not rise to the moment. So I don't think LIV Golf is going anywhere. Everyone wants it to disappear, who are tour loyalists, and they feel like, you know, that was part of the narrative. Like, LIV sucks. It's never going to work. Now the ground has shifted. It's like, okay, the new narrative is, oh, LIV's going to get shut down by Jay. Like, I don't think so.
Why is Taylor Gooch not in this field, Alan?
Well, partly because he didn't rise to the occasion and go through open qualifying like Sergio and others. Like, it was a really curious decision on his part. I mean, the guy's been playing great golf. He's ascendant. You know, he said it was partly in protest and partly because it's a busy stretch. I mean, give me a break, Taylor. Like,
one day.
I mean, he did get jobbed by the USGA. You know, they had always exempted into the US Open anyone who qualified for the tour championship. Taylor Gooch made enough points during last year's FedEx Cup season to earn a place in the tour championship, even though he left for LIV. So then the USGA changed the wording to say not only qualify, but eligible. Now, obviously, he forfeited his eligibility when he went to LIV. He's the only guy who's affected by that very arbitrary change in wording.
Right.
And, you know, that was a little window into the soul of Mike Wan and where he stands on this whole divide, because he sanctioned all that. And it was interesting. It doesn't, as Phil, of all people, pointed out, it doesn't serve the USGA well when you have a guy who's been playing at such a high level.
Right.
I mean, shoot 62-62 in any tournament in the world.
Right.
Is impressive, let alone against a lot of major championship winners and Hall of Famers and Ryder Cuppers on a course that has a legit pedigree. I mean, that course over in Singapore, it's hosted Singapore Open a bunch of times. The roll call of winners is really good. I mean, it's a legit golf course. So I don't know how it benefits USGA to exclude him, but that was their choice.
It's kind of a weird thing to be focusing on one missing player on the eve of a great championship, but it does feel a little wrong. You know, I'm yes, as you point out, he could have, of course, played in 36 and qualifier if he wanted to, and he didn't.
And he should have. I mean, that was a mistake by him, but it was also, you know, he said it was partly in protest to like kind of bring attention to what the USGA did. And again, when you get into these issues of antitrust and collusion, it doesn't look good.
Yeah. So we're here. Do you think this means that we're never going to see a US? Oh, pardon me as I'm asking this, but I do think I know the answer. Torrey Pines is not on the list for anything, is it right now? Not yeah, PGA or US Open, nothing.
No,
I mean the as you were saying, it's got the annual event. Maybe that puts it in a special category. But I thought those Opens were special at Torrey. Well, we had two great winners.
Yeah, two walk-offs on the 72nd hole.
Yeah,
or the
kind of.
Two amazing putts on the 72nd hole.
Yes,
Tiger went on
and
to do his
two really really great players and beautiful backdrops.
People. The architecture wonks don't like Torrey Pines. It's a somewhat rudimentary test. There's not a lot of imagination. I mean, every hole has bunkers, and every green is bunkers in the fairway. Every green is guarded by bunkers.
Right.
It just asks a very basic question, like, can you execute the same shot over and over? Can you hit the fairway? Can you hit it on the green?
Right.
It's slightly ponderous, but it does sort of bring out the most precise and the best golfer, which was Tiger Woods, and now it's John Rahm.
So, right.
Yeah, and it certainly looks great on TV. So the San Diego community has turned out, but you know, Pebble's an anchor site. I think this is going to become an anchor site. Olympic is back in the mix after they've redone it. So.
Right.
Something's got to give, and unfortunately, it's probably Torrey.
Yeah, but as you say, they still have their winter event, so it's not like totally.
No, it feels right.
Totally out of it.
They've been playing the San Diego Open for decades and decades.
It's an interesting time in major championship golf because I think the PGA, even though I was dubious about it first, going to May has been a great move for them. But after you saw the greatness of a course like Oak Hill, I don't know. Maybe the stuff they're building in Frisco is great, but
yeah.
It's hard to feel excited about it. But when you get there, oh, this is spectacular.
It looks cool. And that's also Gil Hantz, who also did an Olympic. Like,
yeah.
There was an Open doctor, you know, Reese Jones. Or no, I'm sorry, Trent Jones.
Yep.
Yeah, Robert Trent Jones. Yeah. And they kind of took it in a very penal, old school smash mouth style.
Yeah.
You know, Gil's a different aesthetic, and it's still tough, but there's a lot more room to play. There's a lot more imagination around the greens, and obviously that we all prefer that. So I think he's found the secret sauce. So we'll see about Frisco. It's a challenge for the PGA of America to find venues that work, and I think it's a mistake to go to the old U.S. Open venues because, as you wrote in your excellent preview piece on FirePitCollective.com, the Oak Hill felt like a U.S. Open,
right?
And so I like the USGA.
PGA needs its own feel.
It needs its own thing. And I think that's new courses. That's taking it to really different spots. So maybe Frisco becomes that. I would love for them to go to Bandon Dunes. I would love for them.
That would be neat.
It'd be amazing.
I mean, it would be neat if Chambers Bay could. Chambers Bay was spectacular, just wasn't quite there.
Yeah.
But it could get there. There's no reason why it couldn't.
I know. Well, I mean, and there was that period where the USGA tried it. They went to Chambers and they went to Erin Hills.
Erin Hills never worked.
Neither one was really an artistic success, although you had great winners. I mean, the Spieth DJ shootout, those shots on the last hole at Chambers was amazing. I mean, that was the rise of Koepka at Erin Hills. So, like, the courses produced, but they didn't feel like U.S. Opens. Like, they're better suited for what the PGA should be. Something new, different, imaginative. I like the U.S. Open at the traditional courses, and even though this is a new venue, this is an old golf course.
Yeah.
I mean, it's George Thomas. It goes back to the 20s.
Like,
it's golden era. And so I think it's cool that they've brought it back into the fold. I expect that this is going to be an incredible week and that they'll be back here again.
Has your editor, Joffe Ferrari Adler at Avid Reader Press, has he read the first draft or the submitted book at this point?
He has, yeah.
How's that going for you?
Well, Joffe, who's a friend and a colleague for both of ours, colleague's not the right word. What is it? He's like our overlord. He's our mentor. He's our big brother. He's our school principal.
He's all of those things and more.
The editor fills a lot of roles. He loved it. I mean, he sent me this super flowery. He's like, I'd put this up against anything Bob Woodward ever done for real-time reporting. And
wow.
It was awesome. You know, I probably aided in the confusion when my tweet, when all the news broke. I had turned the book in Sunday night, like 2 in the morning. Monday, like I slept in,
I took a bath. I took a nap. I've never felt so relaxed and happy in my life. And then Tuesday morning, the world was on fire. But when you turn in a book, it's not the end of the process. It's the beginning of a whole new process.
Right.
The editor gets the first pass. They have some big picture things you can incorporate or you ignore or you fight about. And then it goes to the copy editor, who's like the world's most uptight, you know, English teacher anyone's ever had. Right. And they fuss over every comma.
Right.
There's a legal review. Like, all that takes 6 to 8 weeks at least.
Right.
And the book comes back to you and you can keep massaging it. So I was always going to update it probably through the British Open. And if there was a adjudication of the world ranking and all this stuff. So I have time and I'm reporting the story. I'm feverishly reworking the last chapters, adding new material, going through and massaging passages, amplifying things that we now know are turn out to be more significant than we thought. And so it's cool that a few people had said to me, you know, well, why put the book out now? We don't know how the story ends.
Right.
You know, and I was like, well, we don't exactly know the ending, but a huge plot twist has been revealed.
Yes.
And it's cool. So the whole thing is in one tidy package. And if this news had broken in a month or 2 months from now, I would have been crushed because the book's at the printers. There's no right. getting it back.
Right.
And would have felt dated. So now it's right. going to be up to the minute. And actually, our Jofi and our friends are having meetings like right now about moving the release date up 2 or 3 weeks, which is a lot. Early to mid October instead of Halloween. Just to ride this wave and it's all anyone's talking about. So why not? So
yeah,
I'm game. I mean, this is an intense week for me cause I have to get all the changes done and we're here covering the national championship, but, it's all good. I mean, I have a shocker
for you, Alan.
Yes.
I think that book is more even-handed than you might realize.
My intention.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you that, like in your mind, do you think it sort of bends over backwards to let the LIV story be told? Because the PGA Tour has been sold by a very powerful PR machine for decades.
Yes.
And the LIV people are new to it and they don't have a powerful PR machine that's been around for decades. So you might have thought, oh, it's incumbent upon me to show this other story. But I read it is a very balanced piece of reporting.
Well, thank you. That was my intention. I mean, I'd say my idea of balance is to be critical of both sides and to celebrate both sides when they do something right. And that was, you know, I think it swings back and forth where passages feel pro-LIV, passages feel pro-tour, passages are super critical of one person or one entity. And it just toggles back and forth. So it's like a double dog. Like it's not a dead straight hole where I'm just trying to hit it straight every time. Like I'm trying to tack both directions, and that's anyone who plays golf knows it's more interesting that way. So,
sure.
But I appreciate that. And that was always my intention. It's been interesting in, you know, the stories that I've typed and the podcast we've done since the news broke a week ago. Some people have they've detected, oh, you're suddenly pro-LIV. It's like, well, it's more like Monahan's out there talking, Jimmy Dunn's out there talking. It all happened at a tour event. All the tour guys are talking. Rory's talking. You know, LIV didn't have this platform. Like, and the only guy who's not talking is Yasser because he doesn't have to talk. His money's loud enough.
Right.
And so I felt like, well, then I was advocating for LIV's point of view. I was explaining it. And I was trying to help. My role in this is to help people make sense of all this because so much has happened in the shadows. It's been so secretive. It's so complex and nuanced. And so I feel like I'm a tour guide through this maze in some ways. And so I've been interested. Everyone's like, oh, you're pro-LIV. It's like, no, but I have been talking to LIV people for a year and I can get them on the phone and I understand where they're coming from. But I was also talking to tour executives, tour players, tour agents. Like I've really just tried to explain what's happening, but, there was so much coming out. It's like if you're listening to headphones, you know, and on one ear's got the tour and the other ear had LIV, the side coming, bringing the tour spin was a hell of a lot louder. And I feel like the whole debate needed some more balance.
Right, right. What is your personal feelings about Yasser? You've met him at least on one occasion, right?
Yeah. We had a quick chat actually at Bedminster. He's, I've talked to a lot of people about him. He's a very measured, he's very careful, very soft spoken. And impressive in the energy he projects. He's not a Greg Norman who's loud and abrasive. He's not even a Jay Monahan, you know, this hockey kid from Boston with a chip on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. He feels like a diplomat. He dresses like a diplomat. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure all the stuff is made on Savile Row, and
right.
he carries himself like that. It's right. impressive. And I thought even that interview he did with Monahan was interesting because he was very deferential
yeah.
to Jay.
He took the back seat, literally.
Yeah, he let Jay do most of the talking. There was no gloating. There was no victory lap.
Yeah.
There was no sense that I just bought you. And, you know, if you'd put Norman on that stage, it would have been very different.
Sure.
And there's a reason why Yasser's become the guy, because he always was behind the scenes. I mean, he's always been the shot caller. This has been his baby. He's nurtured it. He's micromanaged it. He's refereed every dispute. Like, he's been more involved than anyone really understands. But I thought it was impressive the way, and as we talked about a minute ago, he's dropped out of sight. He's not out there chirping.
Right.
You know, like Jimmy Dunn well. Everyone in the golf world knows Jimmy Dunn, and he's an impressive individual. But like, for him to go on the Golf Channel and talk about like killing 9/11 dudes with his bare hands, like, that was sort of wildly inappropriate, and he's gone underground since then. Like, no one's heard a peep really from Jimmy Dunn since mm-hmm. that. Like, you know, Yasser would never make that mistake. He's never right. going to get caught up in the moment. Like, he's just a very careful, he parcels out every word very judiciously. And so he's the right guy for this moment. Like, cooler heads needed to prevail. It's not Jimmy Dunn. It's probably not Jay Monahan. It's definitely not Greg Norman, but it certainly is him.
What do you think his relationship with MBS is like?
Well, they're close friends and confidants. Like, you know, he's...
Do you think you can get him on the phone anytime he wants him?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, to run the public investment fund makes you one of the most powerful people in the world. To run Aramco, which is the most profitable corporation on the planet, makes you one of the most powerful people in the world. When the same guy does both, like, that's yeah. absolute power.
There's a multiplier effect there
yeah.
that's incalculable, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. What's your top five? It's probably Biden. It might be Putin. I mean, probably MBS is there in Yasser. Like, I don't know. That's it. Like, those are the people who are moving all the pieces on the chessboard. And so, yeah, he's the fact that he loves golf so much is a big deal, because, and there's a funny quote in the book from Keith Pelley. Like, he said, if Yasser was a volleyball guy, they'd be building volleyball arenas and creating volleyball super leagues and trying to host volleyball world championships. Uh-huh. It's like a great blessing to every stakeholder that he loves golf so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Well, all right, let's get back to the golf course here for a second.
Yeah.
As it relates to Liv, Phil, top 10, no top 10 this week.
I mean, these are the grasses he grew up on. He's a Southern California guy. I mean, that's a tough one. If it's binary like that, I'll say top 10, because that energy he had on Sunday at Augusta, it was like he got his life back. He got his mojo back. All of a sudden he was Phil Mickelson again. That's powerful. And this is his chance to do it all over again. I think this is going to be much more of a short game test than a traditional U.S. Open.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be fun to watch Phil out here. I think he wants it so bad. Like, if you talk about who's walks in the gate here dying to win this tournament, some guys are just hoping to play well.
Right.
Some are already choking in the parking lot, like right. Johnny Miller used to say.
Right.
Phil is here to win this mofo.
Yeah.
He wants it so bad. So we'll see if his game shows up. But I would say top 10. What about you?
Well, if he top 10s, he can contend.
Yeah.
You know, if you really want to go crazy about it, it is most likely his last best chance to become one of the guys who's won the career Grand Slam.
Yeah.
I don't think you've got to drive it very straight here. You maybe have to put irons in play here. Well, if it's breezy like this and the fairways are fast, I don't think guys are going to hit a lot of driver. And he pitches the ball great. And he sometimes can putt well.
Yeah.
It wouldn't shock me to see him contend at all, actually, based on how well he played at Augusta National.
I mean, you can debate a lot of things about how the landscape has changed, but Phil was right. Like, he called all this stuff a long time ago. He's advocated for it.
Yeah.
And
Sing. Yo.
What's up, Paul? Get in here.
Come on in here. We need professional help. Paul Azinger.
In a suit and tie.
My exact contemporary. Why he looks 10 years younger than I, good, I do not know.
My man, how are you? How are you, man? Good to see you.
Have you played this course much over the years?
Yeah, I know the course reasonably well. It's a real tricky course, you know, and a couple players think that there are going to be some complaining.
Good.
Play slow.
Good.
Yeah, U.S. Open.
Well, you know, the USGA, they set it up for themselves. They want to set it up the way they want to do it, and they'll do it. They're not trying to make the – I hope they don't try to make the players happy because that wouldn't be right.
That wouldn't be them.
It wouldn't be them. So it's I'm really looking forward to it. There's going to be a lot of decisions that need to be made off the tee, I feel like. And, you know, I was just out there on number six. It's a real tricky hole. You know, you can go for it. It's a short hole. And I watched John Wood on Golf Channel this morning do a nice about a six-minute segment on that hole on how to play the hole. Well, I got out there this afternoon, and three caddies were out there. Tom Kim's caddy, Joey, was out there, and Homa's caddy was out there, and Xander Shoffley's caddy. And they were on the cell phone, and one was on the tee, the other was down there by the green, and they were throwing up bottles and trying to see each other on the line and all this stuff. And this is how hard they work to get ready for what they're trying to do today or this week. And they were really trying to figure out how to play that hole. This is a strategic course. The local caddies could probably tell these guys. They should hire a local caddy, I feel like, and let them go around with the players. That would be wise. I don't know if anybody's thought about it.
Yeah, I do not think you're going to see guys hit a lot of driver. If it stays dry like this, if the sun stays out, the bakes out, why would you hit driver here?
I don't know that they have to hit driver, but it feels wide to them. You know, the fairways aren't as wide as they look maybe, but it feels wide to them.
Yeah.
They may hit driver. I've heard everything from, you know, they're going to hit every club in the bag, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to Gil Hance the other day on the phone, Dan Hicks and I, with Gil Capps. He put the call together, and we got a real inside scoop on how Gil Hance wants this course to be and how he wants it to play. And, you know, the goal is, you know, again, it's like the USGA mantra, not to embarrass these guys, but to really identify them, who's the best. And it's the kind of property that can do it. George Thomas is Gil Hance's favorite architect, you know, and it's a masterpiece, you know. But a couple guys, I think, might explode and get all irritated about it.
Yep. Good. Well, when you're in L.A., how often do you get mistaken for Dennis Quaid?
Never yet.
That is a compliment. Oh, now, of course, when I ask Nick Faldo how often he gets mistaken for Harrison Ford, he says, oh, all the time.
Oh, of course he would say that. It's possible. I could see it.
What was your best U.S. Open finish?
Well, let's see. I probably Baltusrol. I had really some nice chances. I lost by three at Brookline when Curtis won. Mm-hmm. I had a couple. Deer Jansen won. I had a really good chance. I had a couple three chances.
Yeah.
It just didn't happen for me. You know, it was one of those things. Usually putting was always my issue.
Yeah.
Well, do you think 280 is a good score this week?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it's a good score.
It's a great score, actually. It's a great score. 280 is probably going to be a winner.
Well, that's what Shipnick says.
Is that four under?
Oh, is it four under?
It's four under.
Oh, I was thinking it was a 70.
You never know. Like right now, we had fog all morning, you know, that marine layer, and it was kind of brisk. It was a little bit breezy and cold, and then it burned off and got slick calm, didn't it? And now look at it. It's cooking. This is a sea breeze, a standard sea breeze. I think the guys are going to be out here playing in this. You know, it won't be easy. We'll be covering it all too on NBC.
Yeah. You know, what's your attitude about handling LIV guys versus PGA Tour guys?
Oh, on the broadcast, that's not my call. I mean, the producers are going to show the shots that need to be shown. That Tommy Roy and Tommy Randolph and the director Joey, they're going to get it right. There won't be any favoritism from those guys, I don't think.
Yeah. Will you address the whole changing landscape of professional golf on the telecast?
I hope not. Good God. none of us know enough, but I just know I feel like the players need some representation, you know.
Like a union?
I'm not saying that, but, you know, they need somebody that, you know, obviously they're out of the loop. So.
When the Tour Players Association stuff was going on back with Larry Rinker and Mark Brooks and those guys, what was your stance on that? That was a quasi-union back in the day.
Yeah, I heard what they were saying, but I didn't think it was all that necessary at the time.
You didn't pay your $1,000 dues and join it?
No, I didn't join. You know, I was against what Greg was trying to do, and back in the 90s, Arnold, you know, everybody, whatever Arnold, you know, and Jack were all about. That's kind of what we were all about, but this is just such a shock, I think, to all of our systems. We don't even know what's, we don't know what's coming. You know, you don't know what's coming. I don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
Al and I were saying earlier, and I'd like to hear your take on it, but all the chaos in golf right now, it only makes the majors more major.
You know, I look at it like this. What an interesting time to be in the sport of golf. I mean, we don't even realize it, but we're on a heck of a run, guys. I mean, oh, we really are. Yeah. We're getting to watch it all. You know, we, all of us got to watch Tiger, and we got to, you know, I got to play. We're, but you have different runs. I think we all go through like 10-year runs. At least I do. It seems like I do.
Yeah.
But I'm on a good run right now. I'm you know, pretty happy to be in the game of golf and covering it. It's pretty exciting because nobody knows what's happening. We don't know what's going on. I really feel, I wish the players would get somebody to represent them in some capacity.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than Jay, you know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I hear you loud and clear.
Paul, great for you to stop with us. We appreciate it. You have yourself a great week. Yeah. Without Roger, I don't know who handles the wine decisions at dinner.
Roger was here today. Oh, nice. It was great to see him. It was great to see him. I wish that Roger was still working and Gary too, because we love him.
Yeah.
But times, everything changes.
John's going to be in the house tomorrow.
He doesn't change.
No, Paul does not change.
Timeless.
Yeah. Yeah. Sing.
Pleasure.
Good seeing you, big guy. Right.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah.
Who the hell was that?
Yeah. Good for you. He's holding a he's holding a yardage guide. Oh. Yeah, Paul Azinger.
Honestly, now you and I don't watch a lot of golf on TV. But
don't
I know
say that.
That
don't tell people that.
I know that. Well, we're here watching it.
We're in person. Yes, right.
Hi, guys. But honest to God, people go crazy about their golf announcers.
I know.
Now, Paul Azinger, first off, he's super knowledgeable about golf.
Yes.
He sees a shot and he describes it. Why do people have such polarizing feelings about Paul Azinger?
There's this weird element of golf Twitter that they're obsessed with commenting on TV. Like, there's an easy solution. I mostly have it on mute.
Yeah.
like
even Nick Faldo, he knows a lot about golf, a lot more than you and I, and he describes shots very, very well. I actually prefer Paul. Johnny Miller, well, he was outstanding. I mean, we've had a lot of good golf broadcasters over the years.
It's such an intimate thing. They're in your living room with you, you know, like you. It's like they're a guest 20 weekends a year, and they follow you into the bathroom. They're maybe while you're eating a meal, you know, it's like a real relationship you have with these people. And so
I generally like them. Like Mackay, I've said this to Mackay many times. Mackay's thing was, he knows a lot about golf. He'd see the ball in the lie and tell you what the guy could do out of that lie.
Yeah.
Well, if you talk to Tom Watson, he says the lie tells you everything.
Yeah.
The lie dictates the shot, including the lie when the ball's sitting on a tee and what the wind's doing and everything else. But
yeah,
golf's a thinking person's game. And I just think it's neat that we've got so many former players who are well-spoken. You know, Phil, for the 20 minutes that he did, it was brilliant.
This is an underrated aspect. Phil's back, baby. Like, all the things that it looked like he gave up, that were taken away, he could be in the tower.
Oh,
he can
I
be
see.
An honorary starter at the Masters.
Uh-huh.
He can be a Ryder Cup captain.
Uh-huh.
Like, if the game is going to get put back together and reunified,
yeah,
like, all the things that we thought Phil had given up, like, they're attainable again. And Phil in the CBS tower would be spectacular. And so, you know, that was probably going to happen. It was a lost opportunity, and now he's back in the mix.
Right. That's interesting. I mean, right now he's still such a polarizing figure, but he could potentially get there. We've seen bigger reclamation projects.
Yeah, Bill Clinton.
You beat me to it.
I mean, polarizing is good. Like, that's if you're in the entertainment business, that's why Stephen A. Smith works. That's why you know, Skip, what's his name? Bayless Works. Like,
yeah,
polarizing is the name of the game. Like, why wouldn't you have Phil in there? He would be so entertaining. Some people would hate it, but they would always be talking about it.
And yeah.
If your job is to create buzz, like, why not? But
people sometimes say to me, what's Alan like? You know, Alan, what is Alan really like?
What is your answer?
He has a very unusual personality defect that he works to his advantage. He does not care if people are pissed off at him.
I mean, yes and no. I enjoy the banter. I kind of enjoy the shrapnel, but I'm human, you know, like.
You bleed?
Yeah.
I know.
Are we quoting Shakespeare? but I mean, my compact is with the reader, right? Like that's my ultimate. Well,
we're the same. Yes.
I'm willing to put it out there. And yeah, I get chirped at. People, you know, Justin Thomas trolls me on Instagram, but if that's going to inhibit you from saying what you believe or reporting like something like that you believe is really insightful, then you're a pussy and you get out of the business. Like, yeah, that's the equivalent of a guy who's got, you know, 240 over water into the wind on the same second hole. Is he going to try to win the tournament or is he trying to protect second place? Like, you know, yep, either you go for it or you don't. And so,
unless you're David Toms.
Yeah. Well,
then you lay up, pitch it beautifully, make the putt and win.
That's an excellent rebuttal. But
there's more than one way to make four.
There's more than one way to make four. The point is, like,
is Jake distracted by something?
Yeah. He's checking out the girl in the green dress. I mean, Jake, clean it up, man. I will say, have you noticed how much attention we're getting just by holding these microphones? Like, we should definitely do this down in like Abbot Kinney or a place where the beautiful people are and pass out business cards. Like, it'd make the week a lot more interesting, especially for me.
Very well said. It's been interesting to see how your profile has grown in the past year. I mean, what's it like for you now? But Phil, the book came out and suddenly your profile changed with it. And I noticed it last year at the U.S. Open and even here today. What's that been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's fun, you know, whatever. The thing that made my brain melt was I took the train down from Boston last year during the U.S. Open into New York City to have a celebratory lunch with my editor and my agent because, you know, the book was on the bestseller list and all that. And then afterwards, I was walking in the East Village, and I was crossing the street. Like, I was dressed to go out in New York City.
East Village is not Golf Central.
It's not the Upper East Side. Or Westchester. Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't like I was wearing, like, four different golf logos.
Right.
And I was walking across the street, and some dude's like, hey, are you Alan Shipnuck? I was like, yeah. He's like, I love the book. Like, that was weird.
Yeah.
That was weird. It's one thing. We're standing next to the 10th fairway here
right
at the U.S. Open. People are going to recognize members of the golf media. But when you're out of context, I was eating pizza in the Chicago airport, weird things like that. It's, mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, we have public facing lives. So,
well, I think Jake probably wants to wrap this up. But how do you feel about Alan? Would you like to keep going? Would you like the listener to?
No.
Should we release the listener?
You're stealing my lines. You can't win the U.S. Open on Tuesday, but you can definitely lose your audience if the pod goes too long. So, yeah. We'll let our people go. But it's always fun, Michael. And I think the plan is we're going to do one on Friday.
Great.
Evening, the halfway Super. Mark.
Yes.
We'll certainly do it Sunday.
Yes.
When we have a winner and we can look
forward to it. And we will have a winner on Sunday because there are no playoffs anymore in the major championships. Well, excuse me, no 18-hole Monday playoffs.
How lame is two holes? Like, either be terrible. Sudden death or be four holes. Two holes is like, is this weird, a like joke. Splitting the baby. Like, come on.
Yeah.
It is cool, though. I haven't seen the closing TV window, but you know they're going to push it deep on Sunday because then you get the primetime East Coast audience. Like, I love the idea that the U.S. Open is live and being decided, and people are watching it in the dark. I don't know why that's so cool to me, but it is. Kind of cool. Yeah. In the United States. We're not talking about in England.
Right, like, right.
Jake,
do you know that there was once a 36-hole playoff for the U.S. Open back in the day?
That's macho. That's old school USGA.
Yeah.
They've gotten too kind.
Yeah.
It's just patchy rough. Two-hole playoff.
I was a little surprised by Zing because I thought he'd be more aligned with the PGA, with the USGA as your fierce father. And it was...
No, but all the players...
The players are the players,
They resent the USGA. They feel like 1 week a year, these blue coats and these bureaucrats like dictate to them how to play the game, and half the time they screw it up. Like the anti-PGA sentiment runs really deep among the players. That, and it's only becoming more exaggerated with all the course screw ups in the last 10 years.
I think you unwillfully misspoke. You said the anti-PGA tour, but you were looking for anti-USGA.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think
you're right. My bad.
But it works both ways. It works right now.
In this weird intersection of
what interest. Is Tiger thinking right now as he's listening to this podcast? And Tiger, you've got my cell. Call if you wish, but
we'll patch him in. So this was interesting. No, I can't say it. I'll spoil something that's good in the book. But yeah, Tiger is, he's a little miffed. He's a little befuddled because one thing Tiger's not used to is being on the outside looking in. And he got kind of hoodwinked like a lot of people in this whole deal. And
yeah, that's true.
And he put himself out there and took a strong stance in favor. And he didn't really go down the moralistic route because he kind of probably intuitively knew that was a mistake tactically.
But
he went down the route of, you know, it's not real competition. It's not a meritocracy. It's not golf at the highest level. But look at what's happening with elevated events. No cut. Like the tour product was beginning to converge with the live product anyway. Like Tiger had kind of lost the argument as it was. So he's probably a little disenchanted.
Yeah. It's got to be kind of weird for him not to be the most powerful person in golf anymore. Because if he were, his tournament would be at least 120 players with a cut.
Yeah. It's interesting that both him and Jack are now advocating publicly for a cut, even if they go from like 80 to 60, you know, which is kind of silly, but just... that's still, everything's up for grabs now. Whatever we thought was going to happen, nobody knows. Like the elevated events could get completely reconfigured. It's all up in the air now. So we'll see how that plays out. I mean,
all right, Alan, get us to our hors d'oeuvre course.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I love when Michael gets hangry. It's good for the listeners. All right. This is the 10th fairway of Los Angeles Country Club. That's Michael Bamberger. I'm Alan Shipnuck. Thanks for listening to this Fire Drill podcast. We'll be back in your ear on Friday and on Sunday and typing in between. So thanks for listening. That's the end.
I bet big and I played to win. Made a fortune when my ship came in. I ran the table, never thought I could fall. Then the wintertime hit me like a cannonball. And now I can't shake this losing streak. Every road I take is a dead end street. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.